Dies ist eine besondere Folge und in den nächsten Wochen wirst du noch die ein oder andere besondere Folge auf die Ohren bekommen. Schön, dass du eingeschaltet hast. Ich freue mich sehr bei meinem Podcast How to Impress. In den nächsten Wochen wirst du Interviews hören, die ich im Vorfeld der GSA-Convention aufgenommen habe, für den GSA-Podcast vor Ort. Jetzt waren die Leute so viel beschäftigt mit anderen tollen Vorträgen und Workshops, dass wir gesagt haben, wir geben diese Podcasts an die Öffentlichkeit. Ich habe das auch mit allen Interviewten so besprochen. Und deshalb darfst du dich freuen auf Interviews mit Victor Antonio, toller Salesman aus Amerika, Kelly Swanson, Storytelling Queen aus Amerika, Justin Jones Fosu, selber ein unglaublich toller Mensch, sehr bunt, aber auch sehr strukturiert, der erzählt, warum es so wichtig ist, in persönlicher Verbindung mit den Kunden zu bleiben. Wirklich auch ein wundervolles Interview. Und mit der wunderbaren Isabel Grupp, Unternehmerin aus Deutschland, haben wir auch darüber gesprochen, wie der Blick auf die Speaker-Branche ist. Und zwischendurch werde ich sicherlich auch nochmal die ein oder andere Folge von und mit mir einfach in meinen Podcast schmeißen. Aber ich möchte dich darauf vorbereiten, dass du dich nicht wunderst. Es gibt ein anderes Intro, es gibt ein anderes Outro und trotzdem bleibt es mein Podcast. Ich freue mich sehr. Viel Spaß bei den neuen Folgen. Als erstes starte ich diese Woche mit Victor Antonio. Bis dann. Viel Spaß.
Die GSA Convention.
Rock the stage. Der Vielfalt eine Bühne geben.
Do you think comedy and humor is a basic thing that we could use on stage as a speaker?
Yes. Like big yes. Not like kind of, sort of, maybe. Yes. If you're not studying comedians to get better at speaking, you're missing out. My favorite comedian is a guy by the name of Bill Burr.
German Speakers Association. Interviews, Wissen, Hacks. Für Speaker, Trainer, für alle, die es wissen wollen. GSA.
Welcome to this podcast. I'm very excited. And I'm a little bit nervous because I have a very special guest today in the podcast. And I'm very happy that when I ask him via LinkedIn, if he wouldn't mind to come in the podcast, he immediately said, yes, let's schedule an appointment. So here we are. I saw him at the NSA convention and I was really amazed by what he did because he did a special presentation for us and what it was we are going to talk about. He is very famous, I would like to say, because he also had a TV show in America and he is the author of 9 books. This is the number that I found out when I was doing my researches for this podcast. And what I love is one sentence that he's got. I mean, I love a lot of stuff from him, but one sentence that he got on his webpage, and it's saying, gain enough confidence to reduce discounting. And I think that is a topic that we should talk about also for our speakers. And there are a lot of other things that I would love to talk with him about. A very warm welcome to Victor Antonio. Woo-hoo!
Thank you for having me on the podcast. That was a nice introduction, by the way. Thank you very much. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Victor, you told me before we started recording this podcast, I should just ask you directly. So I would jump into the questions.
Okay.
So just to let the people know that we're not at the NSA convention, you did a special performance for us because you were on stage with 2 characters. How did you come to this idea?
So this, by the way, that I don't know if you knew that was my first NSA National Speaker Association event.
And no.
I've never been a member of NSA.
Oh, and really?
I've never been a member. And so when they called me up about, like 9 months ago, and they said, hey, we'd like you to be, you know, our keynote, one of our keynote speakers for the event. I'm like, is this NSA? Is it first like it's a joke, right? And then like, no, this is serious. And then I go, you realize I've never been a member of the National Speakers Association, right? And they're like, we know. I'm like, okay. And by the way, this is the first lesson I want to drop on people, especially if you want to be a speaker or really in anything you do. I remember Steve Martin, the comedian, once said, be so good, they can't ignore you. Mm-hmm. And I've always loved that line because I've always believed that if you create great content, you're very good at what you do, people will find you. And this is proof that people did find me. So I was trying to figure out what type of presentation I would do, right? Mm-hmm. And so back in 2019, I know this for a fact because we all measure everything either pre-pandemic or post-pandemic, right? So 2019, I did this presentation with a second microphone. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll describe it, but let me tell you where I got the concept. I'll say the kernel of the idea. Mm-hmm. There's a comedian by the name of Jim Gaffigan. Mm-hmm. And Jim Gaffigan does this thing where he'll tell a joke, and then under his breath, he'll make a comment. He'll say like, oh, this is a great Zoom call. Why are we still on it? You know, he'll do that whole lowering the voice thing, right? And he makes these commentaries to himself, right? And I remember Watson going, God, that's such an interesting, you know, I guess shtick or, you know, I don't know. Yeah, shtick is good. And I said, well, maybe, you know, I can come up with something different. And it just sat there for a while. I don't know how long it sat in my brain just stewing. And then one day I say, oh, you know what I'll do is I'll put a microphone off to the side and I'll call that my inner voice. Because sometimes when I'm doing a presentation, I want to stop and explain certain things in the presentation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that's where the idea came from of using a second microphone. I guess I was watching also comedians when they use microphones and how they use microphone stands. And so I decided that the microphone stand will represent my inner voice. Or as I call it, Victor's inner voice, the VIV, right? The V-I-V, the VIV, right? And so, yeah, so that's how I kind of came up with the idea. Jim Gaffigan gave me kind of the kernel of the idea. Watching comedians kind of said, let me try this differently and try this, you know, this approach. And as I mentioned to you before you started, that this was only the second time I had done it at the National Sales Convention. And I was scared because I'm like, do you really want to do this in front of all your peers? You know, and all these people in the business, I'm like, I don't know. But I was like, yeah, why not? Why not? Let's do it. You only live once, right?
Yeah. And that was so great. Do you think you just said that you were inspired by a comedian? Do you think that it's really a good idea as a speaker in general to have a look at the comedy scene to see what they do? Do you think comedy and humor is a basic thing that we could use on stage as a speaker?
Yes, like big yes, not like kind of, sort of, maybe. Yes. If you're not studying comedians to get better at speaking, you're missing out. The my favorite comedian is a guy by the name of Bill Burr, spelled B-U-R-R. And when you watch Bill Burr, it's the way he sets the stories up. Mm-hmm. It's just the way he just maneuvers these stories and he brings them to life on stage. And then he also uses, and by the way, Bill Burr was also kind of an inspiration because Bill Burr does, and I think you're familiar with this, what they call in scene, like you're in the scene on stage. So he's pretending he's talking to somebody else, right? And that also kind of go, okay, there's that Gaffigan guy doing this with the voice. This guy's in scene pretending somebody else is on stage with him. And somewhere in there, the microphone just popped up into my head. So let's use a second microphone. So I think if you like, studying comedians is one thing. One of the things I did is I took an improv class, an improvisation class that lasted like, I don't know, like 7 or 8 weeks. And in graduation, you had to do a live improv session in front of a real audience. Mm-hmm. And so I think improvisation class, I think it's worth taking the time to do something like that. It allows you to think quickly on your feet, become more creative. And just really, if you're doing interviews on stage, improv is just a great way. But big yes to studying comedians, yes.
Mm-hmm. Very good hint, because I have a colleague I know from the GSA who's always asking everybody when he's going to cinema seminar, how do I get more humor in my speech? And I think watching comedians is really a good point, isn't it? I mean, as you just said.
Oh, you bring up a good question. A friend of mine, I am not joking, just asked me this question about, I don't know, not even a week ago, a few days back, we were just getting some coffee. And he was like, how do you infuse humor into your speeches, right? And so if I can back up, when I first started speaking, I was horrible. I mean, just, if you, by the way, you want to see something funny, type in Victor Antonio first Toastmaster speech on YouTube, just when you get a chance. By the way, I have hair. You might not recognize me. I have hair. I was a lousy speaker, right? So it's one of those things, you can get better at it. So in case you're wondering if you're born with it, no, you can develop this very easily. And so when I started developing speeches and I started using humor, I started asking myself, well, how do I incorporate humor? So within Toastmasters, which is a speaking organization, that's in everybody's
area. Yeah, we have it in Germany. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so I started in Toastmasters. And you know how they teach us to speak in 5 to 7 minute modules, right? Your little speeches can't be more than 7 minutes. And so when I develop speeches, I think I call it the 357, right? The 357. I create story modules in 3, 5, or 7 minute segments, modules. Mm-hmm. And then what I do is I string a bunch of them together, right? To create a speech. When I'm thinking of a story or something, I'm typically thinking about a 3-5-7 speech, right? Something short. And then I say, okay, here's something that happened to me. How could I make it funny? Mm-hmm. And then I just like start brainstorming with different ideas. Mm-hmm. If you remember, I had the little Boy Scout story at the end, at the speech. Mm-hmm. That was, I'll say, about 50% true, right? I did wind up buying the popcorn. It was overpriced. But then I said, how can I make this story funny of this little person selling me a 15 bag of popcorn that is totally overpriced, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I said, well, you know what? I'll make it a dialogue between him and I, like salesman to salesman, right? I'll kind of take that approach. And then I just started writing out the little script. And then it just turned out to be funny because, you know, there's certain things, you know. And so I think if there's a way to infuse humor, I think it's just a matter of really focusing in on something very specific, like a specific story you want to embellish on. Like me meeting the Boy Scout, him selling me a $15 bag of popcorn. And then I go, how can I make that funny? That's why I always ask myself.
Yeah, that was such a great story. I really laughed a lot at it. Yeah. So you have, who's not been to America, you have to watch the videos of Victor Antonio because it's going to be a laugh. And as you just said, maybe the first Toastmaster video to be encouraged to develop yourself.
That's, by the way, it's funny that you mentioned that because I get a lot of messages going, you know, I didn't have a lot of confidence in myself, but when I saw how bad you were, I feel better about myself.
And originally you come from the sales topic. So, I mean, you are still in the sales topic you even had a TV show. I mentioned it in the beginning that was called Life or Debt.
Right.
Run the family like a business, which is very interesting. I sneaked in some of them and you even did one with prominent people and so on. And one thing that is also said on one of your web pages is I'm not there to look good. I am there to look my client good. And this, I think, is very to make my client look good. Exactly. And I think this is one very important message also to speakers because, let's face it, sometimes there's also a little thing on stage that is called ego.
Right.
That is with us when we are speaking or performing or whatever. So why is this your main point or one of your main points that you are saying?
Yeah. Like anything in life, I mean, you've heard the phrase, your ego is not your amigo, right? It's never your friend. And so if you don't know that, now you know. Your ego is not your amigo. When a client hires me to speak, right? And, you know, I often think about the position they're in when they're hiring me. So let's just say, I don't know, it's a vice president of sales that decides to hire me to do a sales keynote or some sales training. My goal is to make the person who hired me look good. Mm-hmm. That's, and in order to do that, I have to deliver great content. Mm-hmm. So it's not about me looking good. It's about making the person who hired me look like a genius. Mm-hmm. Say he chose the right person. And so I'm always like other-centric, right? I'm very empathetic. I'm very other-centric. I think one of my subtle superpowers, if I can call it that, a subtle superpower I have is that I'm very empathetic. Like I'm really paying attention to the audience. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not on track with them and I feel they're not on track with me, I begin to, you know, when you're flying a plane, the pilot hits rough air and then he says, okay, he or she says, I'm going to look for different airspace. In other words, go up or down different altitudes to try to find smooth space. When I do a presentation and it's not going well, my brain already can detect it. You're like, I just know that I'm hitting rough air. So then I either try to simplify my content or elevate the content. And I think that's one of my subtle superpowers. I'm very good at that. And so, like I said, when people hire me, to your point, it's not about me looking good. It's about making them look great.
Mm-hmm. This is so important because I think this is, I don't want to accuse anyone about that, but I think this is often the point that people forget when they go on stage, that it's not about them, it's about the audience, so to say. Yeah. And
can I add something to that, Tonya? I just want to add something small to that.
Yeah.
Because I think this is important. This, and you can, I can tell usually the, I'll call them the amateur speakers between the pro speakers. And the amateur speakers spend a lot of time talking about themselves, you know, their whole story, you know, the hardships, the struggles, you know, and I get that. And I know there are stories out there that are just pure motivational, that they're designed for that. But to some extent, you can tell your story, but the more time you spend on your story, the more you're taken away from the value, unless it's providing direct value to the audience. But too often I see speakers just talk about, you know, I can talk about my story. My family's from Puerto Rico, right? Small island. My family arrived in the United States, didn't speak the language. We were poor. We lived in one of the roughest areas of Chicago. I got sad stories you wouldn't believe. But in my mind, I go, well, they don't want to hear my sad story. They're here because they want to benefit from something I can deliver that they can use. And that's why I always tell people, if you're going to share your story, make sure you can then turn it around and it's something they can use.
Yeah.
And so I have a simple formula. It's called story point application. Tell a story, make a point. Now hear how it applies to you.
Very good.
I think that's always very powerful.
Yeah. And I just had to laugh a little bit because I was in the plane back from Orlando to Frankfurt. And suddenly the pilot said, okay, we have only rough air in whatever altitude I'm flying. So, and he said, cabin crew, please. Be seated. And I thought, okay, now it's really rough. So I can't find the good point for the audience. So just listening to your story there. I saw a post of you on Instagram. You see, I stalked you already a little bit. And one sentence that you already also have is finding the why in how people buy. This is also, I think, one of your main topics. And that was so funny, the video that you shared, because there were two ladies with a pen trying them out.
Okay.
So, I mean, for me, it's clear, but can you please say something about the finding why in how people buy? Because I think this is also very important for us as speakers. Why should people buy us?
So I'm going to take a step back real quick. Not too much of history. So my background is actually, I came from the engineering side, actually. I have an electrical engineering degree, right? So I started out as a nerd. And people always find this shocking, right? A nerd who could actually speak and has a sense of humor. So I started out in engineering. And then from engineering, I went into, I went into sales eventually. And then from sales, I did exceptionally well there. And then one day I decided I wanted to be a speaker, do my thing. And so I've been doing sales training, right? And when I started doing sales training back in 2008, so that's what, 15 years now, I wanted to do something different than what everybody else was doing. In other words, how to sell. And I was reading a book by Dr. Robert Cialdini called Influence, you know, the six triggers of influence, right? And I'm reading that book and I'm like, okay, he's taking a behavioral science approach, right? Like behavioral economics, neuroscience. And I go, this is the approach I want to take. I don't want to talk about how to sell people. I want to talk about how they buy. Because if I understand how they buy, then I can adjust my sales presentation. And so he was, for me, the catalyst to create Sales Influence, which the subtitle is Finding the Why in How People Buy, right? And I always talk about that because that's become my mantra, right? Everybody, I've had people say this all the time, finding the why in how people buy. Right? That's when you know people know your brand, right? And so this little post that I found that I put up on Instagram, I was basically having a little fun, shows two ladies shopping for a pan, right, a cooking pan. And one lady is, you know, holding it in her hand, and she's like almost pretending to flip pancakes or eggs, right? She's like, or omelets or whatever. She's flipping, right? She's practicing how to flip. Then the lady behind her is actually she's holding it like a club. And she's taking a couple of swings like she's going to beat somebody with the pan, right? And the title of the video is People Buy Products for Their Own Reasons, not yours. You came up, you know, and the joke is that the one lady, she's going to use it to cook, flexibility. The other lady is going to use it to beat somebody, probably your husband, right? And it's a nice way of saying people don't buy from what you think they're going to buy for. They buy for their own reasons. And that's being very customer focused, customer centric. Mm-hmm. And so when I, by the way, this applies to speaking as well. When I'm going to do an audience, in other words, speak to an audience, I'm always asking before I get there, 2 weeks ahead of time, I always schedule a call 2 weeks ahead of time to figure out, you know, what is it that they're struggling with? And mm-hmm. so I ask this question all the time. It's a great question. And I always ask whoever brings me in, I said, give me 3 to 5 things that you're currently struggling with. Just mm-hmm. give me a list of 3 to 5 things that you're currently mm-hmm. struggling with. And then what I do is I assemble a presentation based on that. So it's for them. Mm-hmm. Now, here's what's interesting. The person that hired me told me what the 3 to 5 things are. Mm-hmm. So if I hit those 3 to 5 things, I'm going to be a hit with him, mm-hmm. right? Or her. And then if I'm talking to the audience, they're going to go, oh, this guy understands our business. So, and I also add, you know, language from the industry. So those are 2 things I do. I find mm-hmm. out what they're struggling with, and then I put it in their context when I speak, and that makes it easier for me to talk to them. So again, I'm very audience centric in this case.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the same as you just said for sales, right? Mm-hmm. to find out what they really want, what mm-hmm. they if they know what they want. I mean,
yeah.
Even there, we can ask some more questions. But do you
that's
think...
Smart, by the way, it's a smart statement you just made. It's a very bright statement, insightful statement, because sometimes, as you know, they don't know.
Yeah,
and so exactly. Our job as salespeople is to guide them to an mm-hmm. answer. They go, oh, you're right. I didn't know I needed this. Thank you for showing me this. So mm-hmm. I'm glad you pointed that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So do you think that working like this is the basic of your success, because you're very successful mm-hmm. and you have an academy. I had a look at, with more than 550 videos. I'm so mm-hmm. impressed, because I mean, yeah. you just have to do 550 videos.
Right,
so do you think this is really the basic of your success? Do you think this is how it was built on it?
The short answer is yes. And so then I'll rewind the tape again. Back to 2008, I decided to do sales influence, right? Mm-hmm. Around that time, there were people out there who were well-known in the sales mm-hmm. world. I wasn't known, right? Mm-hmm. And so Sun Tzu, Art of War, attack your enemy where they're weakest, right? Keep that in mind. Attack your enemy where they're weakest. Mm-hmm. And at that time in 2008, what I realized is that nobody was doing video.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing I realized. Nobody was really doing a lot of video. I also read the book by Gary Vaynerchuk at the time, Crushing It. And he was talking about all in on video, right? He's like, go all in on video, right? And then around that time, I'm just telling you, these things happen. This confluence of things happens that says, okay, there's a direction. And then around that time, Google bought YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why would Google buy YouTube? Because they're investing in video. So I mm-hmm. said, okay, from now on, we're doing video. I think that's where we can attack the enemy, because that's where they're weakest. And so I was on this constant, this cadence of 3 to 5 videos a week. Like wow. every week, 3 to 5 videos wow. a week, every week. Mm-hmm. And I was just going for it, you know, and I wasn't, one of the things I didn't do too much, and I'm glad I didn't, was I didn't auto-censor myself. You know how sometimes you do something and you go, oh, that's not good enough. I'm not putting that up there. Mm-hmm. I didn't do that. I mm-hmm. didn't auto-censor myself unless I really thought it wasn't good. And so I was putting up content just on YouTube. Mm-hmm. I think I have like 1,600 videos.
Wow.
Like 1,600 videos. And so, and then I started building the academy. And then here's what's interesting. So I have all these friends who are starting out with me, right? And they're like, Victor, you're an idiot. Why are you giving away your content for free? You're an idiot. Mm-hmm. And they didn't understand what I already knew, where the market was going. Mm-hmm. This whole thing about charging for content was going to go away the way of the wind. Wasn't going to be as popular anymore.
Mm-hmm.
What was going to happen is that all these tools were going to be used as marketing tools to get what I wanted, which was a bigger prize. See, they wanted to sell a $100 course. I wanted to land a $10,000 gig for speaking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then somebody said this to me, I thought it was interesting. He said, Victor, but if you're giving them all the material, all these training tips, right? Why would they hire you?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you don't get it. They still have to assemble it. He goes, I don't know what that means. And here's like an analogy I came up with. And if you get this, you get this. I said, we've all done puzzles, right? Puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So if
mm-hmm.
I gave you a 500 piece puzzle, mm-hmm. you would what? Sit down, look at the picture, and then try to, we all do the edges first, right?
Right.
And then we just fill it in, right? We look at the little objects, we start combining mm-hmm. the object. Now, that's scenario number one. Scenario number two, I give you the 500 pieces, Tanya, but I do not give you the picture.
Yeah. Right.
Could you put the puzzle together?
Yeah.
It'd be very hard.
Yeah.
And so I tell people, I give everybody the pieces of the puzzle, but they still have to call me to put it together for them because they don't see the picture. And that's the power of creating video. And to answer your question finally, is that through all these videos, I generated all these inbound leads because people kept finding me on YouTube. Like, who is this guy? Let me call him up. Let's bring him in. And so I've been an inbound marketing guy since 2008. I don't do any outbound.
Wow. I mean, this is such a great tip. And this is such a good message because I think a lot of people, including me, are really stressed by doing all this outbound stuff and saying, hello, here I am. Please just find me and stuff. And I mean, what I find interesting is that you build up your academy. And as I understand you, the speaking came a little bit later, right? You started with the academy and with the sales training.
No.
And then, no, it started immediately.
Yeah, speaking started immediately. I developed content, but I had not created the videos yet, right?
Oh, really?
So I started, the video library started building slowly, right? So I started putting videos on YouTube. But remember, those are like onesie twosie videos, right? They're not courses, right? And then maybe about a year or two into that, so let's say it's 2010 now, I start developing the courses. But if you just put up one course, I'm just going to buy one course. So it took about easily about 2-3 years to develop that library, a decent library. And then we just keep adding to the library. And I say that to people because people always think this is like a light switch. You just turn it on, magic happens. No, it is effort. And so the first couple of years, I'm doing these, you know, 3-minute videos that I'm putting up on YouTube, right? Nothing to do with my courses in the academy. This is just YouTube stuff. And I called it chum. I don't know if you're familiar with the word chum.
No.
It's when it's the meat, the red meat you throw in so the sharks will come up.
And oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I get it.
So I consider YouTube videos, short videos, chum. So like that, you can have the client sharks come to the top and they said, who is this guy? And then, so like I said, 2 years into this, I start producing the actual courses, but slowly over time. It takes a while to develop these courses. So again, we have, I think it's like 62, 63 courses with over 500. I think it's more like 600 videos out. We have to update the website, but it does take time. But if you love this business, like I do, like you love sales training, you love speaking, it's not work. I mean, it's just fun stuff, putting this stuff together.
Very good. Thank you very much for that. And we are coming closely to the end. But one thing that I think is also very important for my colleagues and everybody who's listening to us is, how did you get an international speaker? Because you're not only speaking in the States, which are already much bigger than Germany, but you've already been speaking in Europe, in Asia, in wherever. Yeah. So how did you do this then?
The short answer is videos. I mean, that's the short answer. People find my videos. They're like, yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, I'm telling you, everybody wants magic. And I'm like, I got none. It's very simple.
Well, that's good. I mean, yeah.
The thing is, what happens is I did a couple of free ones, by the way. Like we always do free, right? If you're starting out, you got to do some free ones. But yeah, people find me. Like I remember doing one in Seoul, Korea for Cigna. They found me online because I was like, how do you find me? We found you online. I did one for Saudi Airlines in Saudi Arabia. How'd you find me? Online. Africa. How'd you find me? Online. Right. Wow. And so if your content, and I think this is the part that people should take seriously. If you could create great content, content that makes people go, huh, not the cheesy content that every, you know, if I start telling you the sky is blue and so is the water. Wow. You know, people, they're not impressed by that. But if you give them some insight, you know, I use the definition of insight as, give me information beyond the obvious. That's my definition of insight. Information beyond the obvious. And so I'm a consummate reader. I love studies, case studies. And what I try to do when I'm reading is I read with the goal of extracting something from this material that my audience will go, huh, I didn't know that. And the more I can do that to an audience consistently, the more they want to follow you and the more they want to bring you in. So again, you be a great speaker, but also have content that says, wow. So be a great speaker. In other words, your delivery has to be great. And by the way, I always emphasize, use your own personal style, develop your own personal style, and then also have great content. Put those two things together. You're going to be successful.
Very good. Thank you very much. So, and now almost the last question. Are you now a member of the NSA?
I am, actually. I joined NSA.
Very good.
Yeah, I joined very NSA. Good. Well, it's funny because, you know, when I got close to the organization and I met a lot of people and I said, you know what, I want to stay in touch with these people. And mm-hmm. that seemed to be like some of the speakers that there were some great speakers there. There was mm-hmm. a guy named Mark Scharenbach, who's mm-hmm. just an amazing speaker. Mm-hmm. Don Hudson, who mm-hmm. I didn't expect to see and I've always idolized, was mm-hmm. there. And so I met a lot of great people. So, yeah, I joined.
Yeah.
To which my friends say, it only took you so many years to join, but thank you. So, yeah, they laughed at me. They made fun of me.
Yeah, very good. But I mean, for me, it was my first experience being at an NSA convention. Okay. So this year is the next GSA convention where I'm the chair, as I said. And I'm very much looking forward meeting the people again. And I have to see, maybe not next year, but I will come back to America every time I can do it. Because it was also what was very impressing me was the thing that the people were really constantly saying that this feels like a family. I mean, we have this in Germany as well, but this was really everybody who got an award, for example, said the NSA is like a family and it's like the people you want to meet every time you're there.
And if I'm being really transparent, which I am, I didn't understand that. Like, mm-hmm. you can say it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but exactly. You have to be there to feel it. Mm-hmm. And you go, mm-hmm. oh, okay, I get what you mean. Because mm-hmm. you hear that. Yeah, we're like family. You go, yeah, whatever. Like,
yeah, exactly.
But when you're there, you're like, oh, okay, this is what you really mean. You really mean this. So it was cool, too.
Yeah, exactly. I can totally agree with you. I'm totally agreeing with you because this is how it feels. And I had the point that I lost my luggage before I came to America. And the people from the GSA were immediately, because I had to go to the comedy night, and they were immediately, I give you this. I know it's a bit too long, but you know, and this is so, you don't expect it, but the people are like, I support you wherever you want to support. And that is really great. And I think this really makes the associations great and special.
I think everybody was there. It was very open, by the way. You can approach anybody. Yeah. Anybody was approachable.
Yeah.
Even some of the established speakers were very approachable. Yeah. You know, and everybody was very kind to each other. So, you know, if you're a speaker, you know, I would recommend joining. It's a great organization. Like I said, I didn't know it because I was always on the outside looking in. I never took the time to go peek at it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad I did. I'm glad I was forced to join NSA.
Yeah. Very good. So last question, is there anything you would love to add for people who maybe are trying to get in this position in that you are right now, being that successful with all what you're doing?
I would, first of all, there's a lot of free content online. If you want to hear about my speaking career, like go to YouTube, just go to my YouTube channel, just type in Victor Antonio, you'll find me. And so there's a lot of free content out there, right? But if you really want to become a speaker, you know, so let's go through the basics first. Let's say you're sitting, you know, in your car at home, whatever, listening or watching this. The first step is to make a decision that you really want to do this. Mm-hmm. That's the big decision. Like, and don't just say, yeah, I do want to do it. No, like literally make a commitment, like almost like a marriage thing. Like you're all in. You got to be all in because mm-hmm. adversity will strike. Right? Mm-hmm. It's hard. Mm-hmm. Like a plane taking off, you're using a lot of fuel, a lot of energy just to get off the ground. And that's where people are really tested, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. you just keep going. I'm not saying you have to quit your job, do this full time. I'm saying do it part time, but you don't stop. You got to say, I'm in for the long run. Like I knew I pushed like a, you know, Texas Hold'em. I pushed all my chips in Las Vegas style. I go, I'm all in.
Yeah.
And when adversity hit, I go, all right, but I'm still all in. We just got to mm-hmm. figure it out. So my whole thing was always, this is my phrase. I just got to figure it out. I literally mm-hmm. say this to myself. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, that didn't work. Okay, but we got to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And there's got to be a way. There's always a way. Mm-hmm. And so if you have that mindset that it keeps you moving forward, right? That's that forward momentum. Two, develop your own style of speaking, right? As soon as I use my voice, my style, Jim Cathcart says, nurture your nature. And I love that phrase, nurture mm-hmm. your nature, which is how you speak. You don't have to be fast talking. You can be slow speaking and people will love you. You can be fast talking, people will love you. Use your style. That's the whole point of authenticity.
Yeah.
And please don't ask anybody about authenticity. I mean, I think that's one of the most ridiculous questions you can ask about. How can I be authentic?
Yeah.
Just try being yourself.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
It's an obvious one, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think
don't be afraid to be authentic and use your own style. That's the biggest fear that people have to overcome. And then again, look at your delivery style. But again, the content has to be so good that you stand out from everybody else. In other words, I read about 2, maybe 3 books a month. I'm a consummate, I'm always like on, one of my favorite channels is Talks at Google on YouTube. They're free talks at Google, like TED Talks, but I like the Google Talks better because they're more in-depth, more meatier. And so I listen to this stuff a lot of podcasts. I'm always consuming content, always thinking to myself, as I mentioned earlier, and I'll end with this. If you understand what your audience is hungry for and you feed them, they'll love you.
Thank you very much. That was such a great end of this podcast. I would love to talk to you longer, but I know time is sharp. So thank you very, very much, Victor, for coming into this podcast, for telling all these stories, for letting us know, for sharing. And as we know, sharing is caring. So thank you very much. I hope to see you again one day. And yeah, stay well. Thanks a lot. And bye-bye.
Thank you.
Die GSA-Convention.
Rock the Stage. Der Vielfalt eine Bühne geben.